Welcome to the Bible Live Quiz Hour. It's time to test and grow your knowledge of the Bible.
The entire Bible every year.
On Sunday nights at 9, join us here for the Bible Live Quiz Hour. Soapy will ask questions from the Bible Live leaders. You call in with the correct answers and you win. It's just that simple. So get out your Bible, put on your thinking cap, and hit that speed dial. Because here's the host of the Bible Live, your Apache Indian scout through the Book of Books, Soapy Dollar.
Welcome, everyone, to the Bible Live.
Welcome to you, Soapy.
This is Stacy.
This is Soapy over here, yeah.
Well, how was everybody's week? We're so glad you're here with us. We actually had finished the Book of John last week and had started 1 Kings, but we had only gotten through just the first couple chapters. So
yeah,
we get to talk all about taxes.
That doesn't change, does it?
It was an issue back then.
Another example of the timeliness. Yeah, timeliness of our Bible reading. April the 15th, we are talking about our taxes and 1 Kings, the chapters we read. We're talking about the nation divides to some degree because of taxes. Solomon would not lower those taxes, not for anything.
Mm-hmm.
And
interesting.
Cost him half of the nation, more than half, really. 10 of them peeled off in the north. But, let's
very
talk about
interesting
taxes.
Yes. Crazy. Well, before that, we'll talk about our taxes maybe today. I guess, so this is the Bible Live, and we read 1 Kings. We got through chapter 18. Let's see. Did we finish? Let me see.
No.
Okay, a few more. Right. But we got to chapter 18
this
week, and it is really fascinating because, I mean, we joke a little bit about, you know, taxes and We have it today. They had it and struggled with it.
But if we don't joke, we cry.
You're either laughing or crying about taxes. But I think that is, you said timeliness, and I also will throw in another timelessness. God is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And in many ways, his creation and how we don't, there's nothing new under the sun kind of thing. And we see this is like nation building 101, you know, kingdoms rising, kingdoms falling. And right now the Book of Kings is just right smack dab in the middle of what God is doing in this nation of Israel. And it's so very similar to every nation that's come before and that has come after, because humans are just the same, that same anthropology, that same human, fallen, broken human nature, those same things that bind us together. The same God who saved them back, you know, saves us, and the same things that he is renewing in us is what he renewed and within them. And I say that because I also, the element of prayer and the importance of that relationship with their God. Israel was always called to be set apart from the other nations. They were the nation that worshiped the one true living God, and that was to be, they were to be faithful to him and faithful in their relationship. We are now past, you know, Kings gets into Solomon's reign, and Solomon was David's son. David, though Solomon inherited a strong kingdom, and I don't think we talked about this a little, maybe 2 weeks ago, when we were in Samuel more. But David's prayer life, I mean, talk about just a heart. You know, he was a man after God's own heart. He was intimate. He knew how to worship. I mean, look at the Psalms, you know. He knew, I think he really walked with and was prayerful with God. And look at the blessings that did bring on Israel. And for our own lessons, we have the opportunity to pray as well. And if prayer is not a part of your, not just your personal, private life and the things, which absolutely it should be, but in terms of our country and the leaders and our world, I mean, who isn't disturbed and saddened by so many things or anxious about so many things that are going on? There's nothing more powerful that you can do for your country than be praying for our leaders, praying for your leadership role and where in the ways that you're interacting in your neighborhoods and your school boards. And We all
have an influence somewhere.
Yes. And
our family, our neighbors, our work jobs, mm-hmm. and so on.
And God is moving. I think sometimes we think, oh, in our little mundane to and fro. But he is always at work. Every hello that you make, every hi, every bye, every interaction is an opportunity, is in some way something that it's not an accident. He's working in your life in some way to bring about the gospel, to renew this world. To, if you are a believer and if you are trust him and you are a part of this great spiritual battle, and you are you're in the Lord's army, and you are a part of, I always love my pastor, pushing back the curse of sin and darkness. You are pushing back the curse of sin and darkness at every turn. And don't underestimate yourself. There's such power.
No, don't. You're right, Stacey. God is, I feel kind of funny saying God is doing,
what God is doing. Right.
Well, we know what God is doing because he says in his word, and he demonstrates all through his word, mm-hmm. What God is doing. And we don't know. There may be other worlds, there may be other civilizations. There could be all things, but we do know in our world, he is busy calling out a people for himself.
Yes.
82 times the Bible said, I will be the God, they will be my people. Mm-hmm. And God is doing that.
Yeah.
And so get on board. Let's be a part of praying and of acting on what God is doing. And we can turn it, at any point, things can turn around. And I just thought of the fact that, Chronicles, we've done 1st and 2nd Samuel, mm-hmm. and that's that transition from the priests or the prophets and transitioning from the judges to the kings. Mm-hmm. And so we've gone through Samuel. Now we're into the kings. We're going to look at this 250-year period. How many years of the kings? And Chronicles, now it's the next book, and I mention it because it, well, we'll introduce it when we read it, and you'll get the idea of it. Chronicles are very special history of the kings again.
Yes.
But what I was going to say is that Solomon figured prominently. We're told in Chronicles what we weren't told in Kings. Solomon, what Solomon's address to the people when they dedicated the temple. Mm-hmm. We now know that David would not allow to build the temple. He financed it to a great extent, but Solomon was the one who built it, and we'll talk about the details of that in Kings. But it's a wonderful passage in Chronicles. It talks about the dedication of the temple that Solomon built. And the Lord appeared to Solomon one night, and he said to Solomon, I have heard your prayer and have chosen this temple as a place for making sacrifices. At times, I might shut up the heavens so that no rain falls, or command grasshoppers to devour your crops, or send plagues among you. Then, if my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, I will hear from heaven and will forgive their sins and restore the land. And we could read more of that, but that's, this is during the time of Solomon.
That was the temple dedication?
Yeah,
that
was at the temple
dedication. That is really interesting. You know, that's a well-known, I mean, I've heard that verse so many times, not in context, though. I always kind of assumed it was in the moment, you know, when currently there were plagues or something, and it was kind of a promise that if you, but he was preemptively telling them this. That's kind of amazing.
God always does it. He always warns before judgment.
Right.
He always gives plenty of warning time.
But this is almost a warning, but this is more of a assumption, like when you fall away.
When you do that.
If you just.
Yeah.
But you've always talked about how built into that system that atonement was always a part of it. Jesus, in other words, was always in the picture. They always knew there was going to have to be a sacrifice of something that would be taking the place. And that is the temple's role, was to house the sacrifice, the atonement for us.
Their expressions of repentance and confession was all included in the temple.
Right. And the promise of restoration, that when we do humble ourselves, and that he will heal.
And the principle holds true even today.
Oh, absolutely.
We are his people.
Mm-hmm. We are the temple.
When God looks at America to judge our nation, the primary, when he looked, he's looking at his people.
Right, the church.
Here, the church.
Universal
I'm convinced that God judges the nation because of the people of God. Their walk with him, their righteousness, their holiness and walking with him, or their disobedience and their so on. It's all there. It's there for us. And Lord knows we are in trouble. I don't think I've heard anybody, any TV show or any radio talk show host, anyone with analyzing the nation, everyone's saying America's in trouble.
Yeah.
Economic trouble, moral trouble, we're drifting, we've lost our foundation, and we're just drifting. But we can stop it. We can pray.
Yeah. I do. I always am encouraged. I do think that one good thing, maybe that has kind of come from a lot of the deconstruction or the shakeup in the church, is there doesn't seem to be an era anymore. I mean, for better or for worse, you know, it's sad in many ways, but also and I'm sure people have heard this analysis, but cultural Christianity really is not a thing, I don't think, anymore. And
I think you're right.
Yeah, there's that C.S. Lewis, no, all get what they want, not all like what they get. Mm. We might, I think, as a nation, you know, two generations from now, say one big oops, maybe cultural Christianity was better than we thought, just because it keeps those moral norms kind of in place, even if it's not a heart, you know, transformation for people. But on the other hand, you know, the lines really are clearer now, perhaps, where those that really say, those that are Christians and proclaim and say that, you know, really, really are, you know, no, there's not that great kind of the cultural just label of it anymore. So maybe that's. And there's always that in Scripture. I mean, you always hear the remnant, you know, that remnant. Even in battle, you know, he would not – it wasn't always about the big numbers. It was often about just a smaller army, but a men that listened to him, men that were – that knew – yeah, I'm not sure if that's exactly – but, you know, you think of
– I think I when I think about this in the context of prayer, and we're talking –
We haven't even actually said the National Day of Prayer.
National Day of Prayer, May the 2nd.
Yes.
And it's a special day. It's unique to America. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's another country of the world that has a day of prayer for the nation. Mm-hmm. And we need, as believers, take advantage of this very natural opportunity to pray for our nation. We would join with millions of Christians across the nation, in every city, small and large cities across the land. People will be gathering to ask God to forgive us, to cleanse us, and to restore us. And we want to invite you to join us on that day.
But
first, any time during the day, pray with your family, with your coworkers, wherever you are, in your car. Spend some time in prayer for the nation. Pray. Mm-hmm. Now, if you can come and join us for the noon prayer rally with the leaders of the community, our mayor, pastoral leadership of the city,
military, the police,
different people, police, military leaders, that it'll be a great rally and a wonderful time of prayer there as well.
It's
and
I Thursday, don't have that. Thursday, May 2nd. Pre-prayer time of worship will start at 11:30, and then at 12 noon, it's going to be at Main Plaza, which is the plaza that's just in front of the San Fernando Cathedral, and it's really beautiful. At 12 noon, the cathedral bells will chime and bring in, you know, the noon hour, and then the mayor will read the official city of San Antonio proclamation as a day of prayer. And then we'll follow it with a time of praying.
And that he doesn't read them, but for information, our governor had issued a proclamation, and
state.
The president has issued a proclamation. Mm-hmm. Now, what you think about any of them individually, and maybe they're in your mind, the proclamation isn't worth the paper is printed on, but that's the fact is
they have
the president had declared and gone along, and it gives us the right and the privilege and the responsibility as citizens To pray if we can.
We were just in our Bible study with church. We're in Luke, and there's that, you know, when Jesus, when they ask him, how do we pray? And, you know, of course, he shares the Lord's Prayer. And then he says, after Jesus talks about a man showing up at a neighbor's house at 3 a.m., you know, in midnight, in the night, and knocking desperately because he has visitors and he doesn't have any bread. And so he's asking his neighbors for some bread to be able to be a good host. He says, that's how you approach the Father with that. And I think, I can't remember the word exactly. It's like shameless
urgency?
Shameless urgency. We come to him at any hour, at any time, with whatever our needs are, because that is the reality of our dependence on him. We need him. And in some ways, I think of, you know, and then he follows it also with what father would give their child a stone if they ask for bread? And if a good father, can do that, how much more can the Heavenly Father give and would not deny it? In some ways, I think of, you know, we might not necessarily, we might have issues with our government leaders or with this or with that. But if they are issuing and saying, even if they don't necessarily mean it or know what they're asking for, but if they're asking for prayer or if they're issuing a proclamation, by golly, you know, as we pray, we respect that and show up and pray for them. And So I will be there. This is San Antonio's 39th consecutive year to have this, and it's special.
The 39th, yeah, right?
This will be.
God is a prayer-answering God. Mm-hmm. He longs. He calls us. He practically begs us to pray.
To ask
so
him.
He can answer and heal our land.
Yeah.
So let's, at this time of the year, consequently, we are also on May 2nd, Thursday, National Day of Prayer. May 3rd, Friday, we start reading the Book of Acts.
Oh, how beautiful.
Started with a prayer meeting in Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw what God did when his people prayed. Mm-hmm. The Spirit came and church exploded across the Roman Empire.
Yeah.
So God can do things, folks.
Yes.
Pray. Yes. National Day of Prayer.
Thursday, May 2nd. Noon, Main Plaza, downtown. Or is San Antonio, or of course, wherever you are.
Wherever you are.
And yes. I always love, come as you are, even in terms of Main Plaza. Real quick, the last thing about it, there will be a prayer tent. So if you need prayer, if you need somebody to pray with or to pray over you, or you just don't have the words, but you want to be in that presence of praying, there will be a prayer tent, and we'll have people there to pray for you and with you. There will also be a Bible tent. So if you need a Bible, free Bibles, both in English, I believe, and in Spanish, and there'll be waters and chairs as well for you to sit and to be healthy while we're there. I think I had one more. Oh, we are about to come up to our first. Okay, well, we've got a little bit of time. While we were talking, one last thing I wanted to just read. It's a C.S. Lewis quote. So, and then we're going to get into the Book of Kings. We will. But in speaking of just your influence and the power that you have as a believer walking in the Spirit, and just that idea, nothing is an accident. Everything has purpose and meaning. This is one of my favorite quotes, C.S. Lewis. There are no ordinary people. You have never talked to a mere mortal. Nations, cultures, arts, civilizations, these are mortal, and their life is to ours as the life of a gnat. But it is immortals whom we joke with, work with, marry, snub, and exploit. Immortal horrors or everlasting splendors. This does not mean that we are to be perpetually solemn We must play, but our merriment must be of that kind, and it is, in fact, the merriest kind, which exists between people who have, from the outset, taken each other seriously. No flippancy, no superiority, no presumption. You have never talked to a mere mortal. There are no ordinary people, I think, is the law. In that, it's such a beautiful reminder of.
It sure is.
Sometimes I think we feel like our influence has to be, you know, millions on a stage at a the worth of one single soul. I always love that poem, The Touch of the Master's Hand.
Yeah.
And it ends with that foolish crowd never can understand the worth of a soul and the change that's wrought by the touch of the Master's hand. And that's us. We get to be the hand of Jesus, the feet of Jesus, moving and working in this world. And
there's another saying by C.S. Lewis. I thought you were going there when he said, if you look at the person next to you, your right and your left, and think, what do you might think of them now? Well, one day there will be a creature more beautiful and more exquisite than you can imagine because of what God is going to make him into be.
Yeah.
And it's always a little good for
us. Reminders for us.
And
the mere mortals. Well, this is the Bible Live, and there's our music. So we will go to a quick break, and then we'll come back and discuss 1 Kings. Any song that has holy, holy, holy in it
is
good in my book. Well, this is the Bible Live. Welcome back. This is Stacy, and my dad, Soapy, is your host. We listened through the book of 1 Kings this past week on thebiblelive.com.
Yes.
We've got the National Day of Prayer coming up, and I'm sorry, ndpsanantonio.org. It's thebiblelive.com or biblelive.com.
Do I have to correct this myself because I was the one who made the mistake of saying that America was the only nation in the world had a National Day of Prayer.
Yes, in your defense, you weren't sure about that, but you thought that was the case.
And I'm still not. There may be still more.
Depends on how much we trust Barry.
Yeah, Barry made it clear to us that Canada has a National Day of Prayer as well.
Which was established in 1967.
Yes.
How neat.
So we call on all our Canadian listeners here on the radio program in South Texas.
They get to see how ours goes on May 2nd, and then they have theirs on May 4th.
We'll take notes.
Anything we missed, make sure to.
All right.
So theirs is May 4th, and then.
Well, that is a really good. That's good. That's I'm glad it. I
yeah,
didn't know that.
It's encouraging, isn't it? That is wonderful. Well, as far as the readings, I did want to say thebiblelive.com or biblelive.com is where you go each weekday to see the live update for the daily reading. It's about a 20-minute reading of this upcoming week. It will be 1 Kings and 2 Kings, and then we'll get into the book of Acts, like you said, at the beginning of May. And so, go during the week to the website to listen. If you miss a day, don't worry. You just go up to the tabs, click on programs, and then podcast, and you have all of the archived readings. And it's by date, and there's a description for each reading as well. And so if you don't remember exactly what day you were or what chapter it was, you can always say, oh, yeah, I remember Bathsheba, and so I know I read that. So it's great. It is wonderful. Dad does an incredible job of reading and putting all of the readings into context. There's always a wisdom and a worship segment as well, which is a psalm or a proverbs and or a proverbs. So I encourage you to go and read during the week or listen to the readings during the week. And then if you do that for a year, you will have gotten through the entire book.
And what Christian is there that hadn't said to himself, boy, well, someday I'm going to read through the whole Bible.
This is it. This is your
This year. Is giving you that chance. I want to read it to you and with you. Uh-huh. We go through the whole Bible, every word of the Bible. We don't just pick out some and preach through the Bible, letting you hear the actual words of the scriptures all the way through. Now, on Sunday night, now we get to comment and ask questions and make observations and so on. But the Bible Live, at its core, is your opportunity to hear the actual Bible itself.
And I will say one more quick thing, that this reading schedule I love. I've tried a lot of different other schedules, chronological or just straight through. There are many reading plans out there. But I love this reading plan because it jumps from old to new. And I feel like it just weaves them together so well. And it things that I love that saying that the Old Testament is the new concealed. The New Testament is the old revealed. In other words, they're all saying the same thing. In that Old Testament, you're reading it, and in light of the New Testament, it's such a revelation. And then when you read the New Testament in light of what all of the history in the Old Testament, it's so beautiful. And so when you go back and forth, I think it's a really special way of reading it. And so I wanted to say that as well. And keep going. If you have already read it, to me, it was about year three that I really felt at home in the scriptures. It takes, I think, a little bit of time.
Yeah. Now, the Kings, the author, I don't know if he knew this or not.
Okay.
A Jewish tradition is that it was Samuel who actually put down First and Second Kings. That's interesting. I just read it again, and I had forgotten. There were a number of documents cited in the book.
Okay.
He cites and he mentions sometime. He mentions sometimes. Oh, I did Samuel.
I thought maybe
you're
you.
Right.
I think you meant Jeremiah. Yes.
Jeremiah was one.
Yeah.
Well,
because he would have had to have witnessed the fall. Is that
yeah,
part?
Yeah, exactly
kind of
right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And in my mind, I was thinking,
that
no,
doesn't
wait
sound
a minute.
Right.
But thank you. I was just testing your knowledge.
Thank you. Stacey. Did I hope I passed?
Jeremiah wrote the book.
That's interesting. Well, that would be, I hope for Jeremiah's sake that he did, because I think he felt like he probably had a lot to get off of his chest. No. Poor Jeremiah. He probably would have been pretty cathartic to be able to just write down the happenings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, interesting.
He started to write the book before Jerusalem was destroyed. Before 586, I'm trying to think now. But the northern 10 tribes already conquered when he began to write?
No, I don't believe so.
Okay. And then that would put the writing, the putting down on papyrus, on the paper, would be somewhere between that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Between that 722 and
at least the starting of it.
Okay.
Yeah, so it starts with though Solomon's, the transfer from David to Solomon, Solomon's building of the temple.
And then Solomon starts off good.
Yeah. I mean, it was the peak of, this would have been the golden years. And this was the, mm-hmm. in terms of the of a nation,
mm-hmm.
Which is kind of ironic in a way, just because that wasn't necessarily their spiritual strength. They were probably spiritually strongest when they were in captivity, or when I hate to say that. I don't know if that's,
the case,
right?
Isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Ease and comfort and prosperity,
luxury, and they towards the end of Solomon's reign. I mean, the wives and just a lot of the luxury of life falling away from God, and it almost does take that breaking, you know, that brokenness that draws them back. I mean, that's when you do get, Daniel and Meshach and Abednego, when they're in captivity in Babylon, it's that remnant, you know, it's not very many, but boy, they.
So we said it's not the numbers, it's the heart.
Yeah.
Of God's
it reminds
people.
Me about, we talk, had a lesson at Lackland about faith. Anyways, it's not the strength of your faith or how much faith that matters most. It's the object of your faith that matters. I feel like that's similar. It's not the numbers that you have. It's the strength, though, of those numbers. It's a little different. But.
Yeah, you're right.
Well, so maybe if you don't mind, Dad, I don't want to put you on the spot too much, but can you give us, so Israel at its peak, financially, wealth, the Queen of Sheba comes and visits, and she's heard all these rumors, and she sees it for herself, and she says, indeed, this is everything that I was told it is. What is the footprint? What is their... What is the amount of territory at this point? We are reaching up to...
Well, yeah, they are actually at the peak of their influence.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much all the way
north,
down to Egypt.
Uh-huh.
And as far up as Tyre, I believe.
Yes.
Which would be, I'm not sure what that is modern day.
Tyre and Sidon were twin city-states north of, up near Damascus, on the Mediterranean coast.
Uh-huh. North of the Sea of Galilee.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And their influence was strong with the king there. They bought all the cedar, the lumber they used for the temple from him.
Okay.
They floated it down on the Mediterranean, and it brought inland to build the temple.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and it was kind of a unique time. So in world history, a lot of those superpowers that had been before were decreasing in their power. So it did also, it kind of fell at a time when it was ripe for growth. And I think Assyria, right to the north, was not as strong as it had been established yet.
They're not even established.
Well, they're really not strong.
Strong yet. This would be...
predates.
The kingdom before that was probably Egypt, was a great power.
Sure.
If that's
in the south.
Then it moves up the coast... The Aramean, Tyre and Sidon, Phoenicia, the Aramean Empire, then over to Assyria, and Nineveh. Okay. And then Babylon further over.
Right.
So the power kind of moved around.
Right. But at this point, there's not really a main superpower, if you will. And it kind of it did allow them to grow, and it was a relative time of peace. I mean, seemingly.
And David had established a great
military
mm-hmm. peace and military.
Mm-hmm.
Solomon started off mm-hmm. well. He was humble, mm-hmm. broken. He fell. And we have that famous story too in chapter 2 or 3, where he asked God.
Oh, sure, in chapter 3.
Chapter 3, and he granted an extraordinary gift of wisdom,
mm-hmm.
and Solomon, and we have that example given of the
yes.
two women.
Oh, and that's so sad. I always
it's sad.
So the story is that so two women and they have young infants, one each, and one falls asleep and the baby dies in the middle of the night. She smothered or some that the baby's dead in the morning. And so she says that well, that's not my baby. The baby that's living, that's my baby. They had gotten mixed up. And so they didn't know how to reconcile this. And so somehow it makes its way up to the Supreme Court, to Solomon,
yeah,
up the ladder. And so Solomon's presented with this, and they don't know how to prove who the baby belongs to. And so he says, well, we'll cut the baby in half, and that way you each get a half. And one of the women says, no, absolutely not. She can have it's hers. It's her baby. She can have. And Solomon says, well, that the mother is the one who would never want her baby to be split in half. That's the mom. And so she gives, you know, he gives.
And
the
that was an example of his wisdom,
right,
that God had given.
Mm-hmm.
But the wisdom didn't last very long. Solomon stopped following the Lord, and a couple of things. There were a number of broken rules, but he married, what was it, 700 wives and so many concubines.
300 he had 700 wives and 300 concubines. I don't know how that's possible. okay.
Yeah, but, and the bad thing about it was, apart from the adultery thing and so on, a lot of those were political,
right,
marriages.
Yeah.
And when he married a woman from another country, he felt obligated to build her own palace and her own temple for her idols.
Right.
And so the idolatry and the immorality of it. And he sent off to Egypt and bought horses.
Oh,
and
yes,
that was specifically, he was specifically told not to go buy horses from Egypt. Now, I don't quite understand that, but he did it because he was told not to, clearly, specifically, and he did. And then finally, I'm trying to think, the taxation.
Which was really more his son, but it was,
yeah.
Yes.
He began the building,
all of the
building mm-hmm. temples
mm-hmm. for his wives,
building his own palace.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the temple here of the Lord was one big project, but then he kept on the building project, And that means they had to have incredibly high taxation mm-hmm. to pay for all of that. Mm-hmm. And it just rolled, the whole thing just finally yeah. imploded. Mm-hmm. And some people kind of think that's what we might be doing. We've pretty well emptied the coffers and gone deeper in debt than ever before.
Right.
And printing money like crazy mm-hmm. and shelling it out. And yeah. economies don't work that way.
Right. And humans don't. I mean, it'll never be enough. I mean, just that idea of, it's kind of materialism and greed. I mean, it's materialism and greed. And it is, I guess that's also why we were coming off the tail end of taxes, of a tax.
Yeah.
I think there's also, though, to materialism and greed, and then at the heart of it, it's not a bad thing to render unto Caesar, you know, what belongs to Caesar. So as far as the idea of, yes, there are corporate things and projects that are worthy and that are good and, but what are we putting that money towards? And is it?
Well, the big story today was, so many billions or trillions, I can't remember, for foreign aid.
Yeah, and it does. It gets a tough.
Ukraine and Israel and other nations.
Even when you think of our very founding, our nation, I mean, taxation without representation. That is, so money, you know, money is no, it's no small thing. And that really is what ultimately broke the tribe, broke up the nation of Israel. So I'm amazed, you know, when you really put it in full, in context, Israel, this was the height of the power, and very shortly after it, I think Israel lasted, what was it, 250 years before they, mm-hmm. that is, I mean, I think on average, that is kind of the typical, the rise of a nation. They usually last about 200, 250 years, and then they either break apart, fall apart, or dissolve, you know, or they just kind of limp along, survive, but are not necessarily very effective or fulfilled as a people. But that is Israel. So they last about 250 years, I think it is. You'll have to correct me if I'm wrong. But before they split, and they split because of the taxes. Rehoboam takes over. He's told you have to do not raise the taxes. Do not keep gouging the people. You have to. And he refuses. And so it's Jeroboam who rises up and takes the 10 northern tribes, and they split off and make, it was the capital of the north, the Samaria, the capital, correct? Is that right? And then Judah in the south.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Initially, Samaria was the capital
of the 10 tribes in the north, which were known as Israel, and then Judah were the two tribes, including Judah, in the south, and its capital is Jerusalem. But they do not last long in the north. I'm not sure if the dates, they last another about 200 years. Is that right? And then Assyria completely destroys and takes them exile. And those are the 10 tribes that are never heard from again. And then it is, I believe, maybe another 200 years.
970.
We should have this written out on our whiteboard beforehand.
Oh, we try to remember.
Those big dates.
930 is when it split, right? Mm-hmm. And till 722, that's about 200 years.
I think it's about 200. Yeah. But anyway, it is a good, it's something that we can be thinking about in our own life, in our own country. Money is it's a part of It's a part of the whole of our renewal. God cares quite a bit. Greed and pride, materialism, that's up there too. I think we tend to think of those things as, oh, those aren't really sinful. You know, they're not quite as shameful of sins as others can be. But boy, are they disastrous. I think especially in children's lives. You know, I heard of a story recently. Maybe this is just I don't want anybody to feel condemned or guilty or shamed with this. But parents, you know, with your children, it's very tempting to want to keep up with the Joneses, you know, make sure that they have everything, have this or that, this fancy car, this fancy house, or all these really nice things. And I a story of a kid that I knew or of that was just crying. I mean, just crying and great, just really upset because he found out his parents were like in hundreds and thousands of dollars of debt. And I hesitate to even say, you know, but I mean, that could be any of us. It's not but just I guarantee your children would much rather you not be a slave to debt or to materialistic things. They would much rather just have you, your relationship with you, and not put that pressure of money and debt on, if at all possible. Sorry, I don't know exactly where that came from. Maybe hopefully that's encouraging. You know, take that. There's so much pressure on people today to own this or have this or materialism, and that it's release that. You don't need that.
Yeah.
Especially, and your children, they just want you.
That's a touching thought. I'm agreeing. Now, funny, when I hear something like that, I always am thoughtful, because the reason it intrigues me, because I didn't have a home.
Parents, that's right.
I didn't have parents. And I'm always thinking.
You're thinking, actually. I would have loved a new car.
No, we were so.
Right. You were so
content with
right.
what we had.
Yes, I know.
It's right. What made the ranch successful was the relationship
right.
with our dorm parent mm-hmm. and their being there for us mm-hmm. and helping us, mm-hmm. not great wealth
right.
necessarily.
Yeah.
Although we never had to beg for bread.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's true.
And I do say that even for myself, it's a good reminder to me, because I'm tempted too to think that, you know, this or this, you know, getting him the best, but never, never at the expense of spending more than you have, you know, or just trust that God's given you exactly what you need when you need it, and that he will provide for your children the same. And well, there is our music. And so the end of our second segment, we will be back.
One more.
With First Kings. Stay with us. This is the problem when you play such a beautiful song. We don't want to, we just want to listen to the music. Aw, it's beautiful. Well, this is the Bible Live, and welcome back. Thank you, Barry, for the music. We are making our way slowly with quite a few little detours, so I apologize. But the book of First Kings, and there's a lot of ground covered in First Kings. We left off in Samuel with David, and now we have David's son Solomon, who is known for his wisdom, probably wrote quite a bit, if not all of the Proverbs. He compiled the Proverbs. Yeah. Interesting. Which would make sense because, so we were talking about kind of this time in history, and one of the things that made Israel as a nation really rise and grow in wealth and, well, was one, God's blessing on the nation and on Solomon and giving him the wisdom of Solomon. But a lot of that wisdom came through relationships. It was not really a time of a major superpower. Some of those more aggressive countries that were outliers were kind of at they were decreasing in power, and there was a lot more trade happening, a lot more. You see Sheba, the Queen of Sheba, coming in. As you mentioned, there was a lot of trade with Tyre just to the north, and that they brought in the cedar and that the temple was used. So you get this sense that Solomon was pretty well, his relationships. A lot of wives. That's the one piece of wisdom he did not have.
He unfortunately married
all of those people, evidently. But that's interesting. So he compiled these proverbs, and who knows that many of those proverbs might have been even from other countries. It's because on one hand, God commanded Israel to be set apart, to be unique, to be a light to the other nations, to be true and faithful to the one true living God. And in that way, to not intermarry, to not marry outside of the faith, if you will. But to be a light, you do have to have some kind of a relationship. So it seems that trade, and I mean, as long as they are faithful and true to God, but able to be a witness, that works. That is good. That is what God wants them to be. I think you get into trouble when you're allowing them to, of course, influence you. And that's exactly, so by the time then Solomon, towards the end of his reign, he has 700 wives, 300 concubines. I don't know how he even knows which son is going to be the next in charge, but his son Rehoboam succeeds him, and there's at this point a heavy taxation on the people, and that is what is used against Rehoboam for Jeroboam to gain some ground and to convince the 10 northern tribes to break away. And Jeroboam is not, it is purely, it's, it seems like it's purely financial. In fact, to the point that the capital of Israel was Jerusalem, and Jerusalem remains in the south. It's in Judah, and so the 10 northern tribes make their capital Samaria. Jeroboam goes so far as placing golden calves on either end of the country, so that even if you were in the north and wanted to go to the temple to worship, to sacrifice, that he wouldn't allow it. I mean, that's you're dangerous territory. How horrible!
Start right off the bat, idolatry, and of course. The priesthood began to be
corrupt.
Corrupt, because many of the priests, the Levites, moved down into Jerusalem. And so
they didn't have much of a system, so they had to just create some sort of semblance of.
It almost kind of looks like Judges, but judges on steroids,
yeah.
Bigger and stronger. Now, Jeroboam, it does tell the story in chapter 11 of how Jeroboam came to be prepared by God
right.
to take over. And I was just reading, it starts in chapter 11 telling how God raised up adversaries or enemies mm-hmm. of Solomon because of his unfaithfulness
right.
to God.
To judge Solomon in Israel. Mm-hmm.
And it comes to Jeroboam. Another rebel leader was Jeroboam, son of Nebat, and so on. And it tells how he was prepared. A prophet told him he was working for Solomon mm-hmm. as a construction, one of them directing the tribes of, two of the tribes.
Okay.
He put him in charge of the labor force from the tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh.
Okay.
So he was working for Solomon. He was doing a very good job. He was put in a position of authority. But then one day Jeroboam was leaving Jerusalem, his work. The prophet Ahijah
uh-huh.
came and told him, because of Solomon's unfaithfulness to God, God's going to tear the kingdom out of his hands and going to split it, mm-hmm. tear it apart. And it tells Jeroboam that. So Jeroboam, then at that point, he knows he's supposed to do this or going to do this. And I think Solomon tried to kill him, or Solomon tried to remove him, but he escaped down to Egypt, and he lives in Egypt under their protection until Solomon died, and he comes and takes over from Solomon's son, Rehoboam.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting mm-hmm. development to see the interplay of what God intended, what God mm-hmm. is actually causing this
right,
whole thing,
right.
setting it up
mm-hmm.
and moving, and it happened. It reminds you of Solomon's prayer of dedication and what God
right.
told him,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you do this and this, I'll take the country out of it. I'll send a famine. I'll send locusts.
Mm-hmm.
Or finally, ultimately, I'll take you out of the country. I'll take you captive.
Yeah.
And that's what ultimately happened
right.
in both the north and the south.
Right. It reminds me of Jeroboam. It's a little bit unfortunate that they're Rehoboam and Jeroboam, just for the record.
Yeah, right.
Jeroboam reminds me a little bit of Saul in a way. I mean, he's actually kind of used and called by God to be punishment or judgment on Solomon and Israel. So he's got God's hand and sort of blessing. And you get from the passages that he is nervous, though, that those that are in the north, if they go to the temple to worship, that he's going to lose his kingdom. He's going to lose the power that he was given. And so he starts to take matters into his own hands. But you sense this kind of desperation to hold on to a power that was
mm-hmm.
completely just handed out, like, laid in his lap. And but he just didn't trust God. And there's this I don't know how else to say it, but this kind of spirit of desperate, just sort of a desperate attempts to cling to this, to a power, to power. And that's really, I think, what gets him. And so he starts to worship false gods and set up, right, like you said, this own system, which is scary. It's almost worse to be close to what the true, you know, as close to, I mean, it really is a religion. Mm-hmm. They're just going through the motions and trying to mimic what they had, but without any of the sincerity, without any of the trust, without any of the, without God. And it falls apart. And one of the reasons that the northern tribes are so weak is there is such instability. They don't have it, like you said, it reminds me of Judges. In those days, there was no king, and the people did what was right in their own eyes. And it's kind of a similar, there was no God. I mean, there was no unifying factor, and people were just doing what was right kind of in their own eyes, and the instability that caused. And so it was just king after king. I believe Jeroboam's son succeeded him, but was assassinated within 2 years of his reign. And then it just kind of keeps on like that until towards the end, we have, I mean, well, I guess this is the end of kind of, but we have Ahab. I mean, the caliber of king at this point is going way downhill. And in the north, there the turnover, I think, is really high. I think there were 40 kings in a matter of 200 years. And just shows how their reigns were so short and there's such instability, leaving them wide open to being attacked by Assyria, which they were. And that was in...
Yeah, there were actually, more specifically, 22 kings of the north and 22 kings...
Oh, I'm sorry.
In the south.
Okay,
no,
so
between
40.
The two of them,
okay.
Were,
I knew 40 was in there
40.
Somewhere.
Yeah, and it's very interesting. Jeroboam, in chapter 14... His son becomes very sick. And so he goes to Ahijah, this prophet that told him, you're going to be the king. I'm going to take it out, away from Solomon, and I'm going to make you king over the 10 tribes. Now he goes to that same prophet, and he needs help because his son is sick. And he said, that prophet, let me see, I was trying to see what your Ahijah talked to him. It said,
what verse, what chapter?
Ahijah, chapter 14,
okay.
Verse 4.
Okay.
Jeroboam's wife went to Ahijah's home. Ahijah is a prophet.
Right.
Who told him, you're going to be the king. He was an old man now and could no longer see. But the Lord had told Ahijah, Jeroboam's wife will come here pretending to be someone else. She will ask you about her son, for he is very sick. Give him the answer I give to you. So when she comes, pretending to be so that he will bless or heal the son, then he said, then he talked, you read it there.
So when Ahijah heard her footsteps at the door, he called out, come in, wife of Jeroboam, why are you pretending to be someone else? Then he told her, I have bad news for you. Give your husband, Jeroboam, this message from the Lord, the God of Israel. I promoted you from the ranks of the common people and made you ruler over my people Israel. I ripped the kingdom away from the family of David and gave it to you. But you have not been like my servant David, who obeyed my commands and followed me with all his heart and always did whatever I wanted. You have done more evil than all who lived before you. You have made other gods for yourself and have made me furious with your gold calves. And since you have turned your back on me, I will bring disaster on your dynasty and will destroy every one of your male descendants, slave and free alike, anywhere in Israel. I will burn up your royal dynasty as one burns up trash until it is all gone. I know. Wow. The members of Jeroboam's family who die in the city will be eaten by dogs, and those who die in the field will be eaten by vultures. I, the Lord, have spoken. That's tough. That is bad news.
Yeah. Bad news.
Go on home, and when you enter the city, then Ahijah said to Jeroboam's wife, go on home, and when you enter the city, the child will die. All Israel will mourn for him and bury him. He is the only member of your family who will have a proper burial, for this child is the only good thing that the Lord, the God of Israel, sees in the entire family of Jeroboam. Wow.
I know. It's striking.
I think there's a lot of several things that kind of that come to mind. This is one of those big picture things that I think of often when you mentioned the people of God, and that the church, that Israel is the people of God, and God is calling out a people for himself. And one of the builders, you talked about how Jeroboam was initially one of the foremen on the construction of the temple. I think there was another mention of someone who was a craftsman who was half Israelite. We think of a lot of times Israelites and intermarrying with other countries and then bringing pagan, worship but it also went the other way. You think of Ruth, the famous, that was Naomi and her husband. That was Israelites leaving Israel, going to Moab, and intermarrying. And in that case, though, those daughter-in-laws, Ruth, chose the true and living God. She converted. And I'm sure that's not the only story of that. And you just think of how they are right smack dab in the middle of all of these nations. And there are believers, and there are those. And slowly but surely, the true and living God and those that follow him are being are expanding and sharing.
Exactly.
The Great Commission was happening then, even.
Let all the nations,
right.
David said.
Yes.
Let people, right. Every nation.
Yes.
Praise the Lord. It's always been God's design. The whole world,
right.
Has always been his vision.
Right. And also one more quick thing.
Yeah.
This is a tragic, and it's so sad, but about her son dying. But this is so like God. It's what would have been such hard, tragic news, the death of her son. On the other hand, he's the only one that's going to receive the proper burial. He's the only one that God kind of delights, the only good thing that comes from it. And yet he's going to die. And that's just like God to flip our perspective. So on one hand, something so sad and devastating, but that's not what's devastating to God. Death is nothing to God.
Yeah.
Death is just the beginning for this child. And so to be able to have his perspective doesn't mean it's not painful. It doesn't hurt. But it does help to just know that our perspective sometimes is not the lens that God looks at. The things that he cares about aren't, the most wealth or the most, or your power, your position. It's your heart for him. And even death is nothing to him. Death is not, it's a defeated enemy.
Yeah, I wanted to agree. I agree, Stacey, totally. And I wanted to add one thought to what I said before about God judges a nation by the people of God within that nation.
Right, yes.
When God looks at America, he looks at his people here. Are we humble? Are we praying? Mm-hmm. Are we confessing sin, being, or are we walking in unrighteousness?
Right.
But he looks at God, and he judges a nation. He judges a nation by the people of God in it, and how the rest of the nation treat the people of God.
Oh, yeah.
So,
I mean, I think that's the at the heart of. What is it? What's the verse that blessing Israel?
Yeah.
And I will bless you. And that's
bless the one to bless you.
Right.
Curse,
yes. And that's the people of God. And that's I like that. I like that verse. How do people treat the people of God?
How are people in our country?
Right.
In America, there were laws to protect worship, to give benefits to the church to worship, and so that because the church would take care of the poor, they would take care of the sick, they build hospitals, they build orphanages,
schools.
And so on, schools. And that was the idea.
Right.
But now we've taken that position away from the church, and the government had taken the by taxation, etc. We see the way we are treating the church of God, the people of God. And not allow.
You know what it reminds me of? Oh, this is interesting. It reminds me a little bit of Moses doing the miracles, and then the priest saying, "Oh, we can do that too," and then trying to do that. It's almost like here are the good, wonderful things that the church and God's people do in this world. I mean, healing through hospitals, right? Providing scholarships and schooling and jobs and so many
charity.
Yes. And it's like the secular kind of says, we can do that better. I don't know if there's a parallel there, but that's just what reminded me there.
There is. Maybe we can
talk about that
next week.
Next week. Aw, there's our music. So, yes, it will have to wait till next week. Thank you all so much for joining with us. This is Stacy. I'm here with my dad, Soapy. This is The Bible Live. Tune in. Go to thebiblelive.com this week. Listen to the rest of 1 Kings and 2 Kings, and we'll come back next week to discuss it. Bible Live is dedicated to helping restore the Bible to our culture. Mailing address is P.O. Box 18888. That's Box 18888, San Antonio, Texas 78218.
Hear the entire Bible every year on The Bible Live, weeknights at 9:30 on this great station. Then join Soapy every Sunday evening at 9 o'clock for fun, inspiration, and valuable prizes on
The Bible Live Quiz Show.
Visit our website, BibleLive.com. That's BibleLive.com for more information about Soapy and The Bible Live broadcast.
You may also order materials at the website and make tax-deductible donations to help minister to our military personnel and broadcast the entire Bible every year to America and the world.